Hello, and welcome to episode 77 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Schreffler. This week on the show, I'm joined by teacher, author, and friend, Dean Gainey. Dean and I know each other from various ed camps in our area and from our local Coffee EDU group. He never fails to be uplifting and fun, so I knew he'd make an awesome guest, and we were finally able to line up this interview. Dean and I talk about the importance of reaching kids, not just teaching kids, teaching in Tanzania, the lack of acceptance of lifelong learning, his belief that something in your classroom can't fail, the need for all teachers to think outside the box for the purpose of teaching more than you would otherwise, and how a great teacher can be firm and kind. There's also a couple of weird audio issues on my end. I've mostly cleaned it up, but in case you notice my voice sounds a little weird, somehow my mic was not working correctly when Dean and I talked. His audio sounds fine, and he says all the really interesting stuff anyways, so I think it's still worth a listen. So, sit back and enjoy episode 77 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Dean Gainey. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brad Schreffler, and today I am very excited because I am being joined by a friend of mine, someone who I get to see at ed camps all the time, and Coffee EDU when we get chances to do it, and I'm just really excited because I've been trying to get him on the show for a while now, and scheduling just hasn't lined up, but we finally lined it up so that me and Dean Gainey can sit and talk. How are you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Not a bad day at work. I kept nice and busy, but I feel like I was productive. You know how you have those good days where you just feel like you're super productive?
I wish they happened every day, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
That would be nice if they were every day. That'd be way more convenient. So, Dean, I'm super excited to have you on the show. I love talking to you. You know, we just saw each other last weekend at Ed Camp Orange and had an awesome time out there, learned some cool things, and got to talk a little bit at a couple of different sessions ourselves. And, you know, I don't really want to speak for you, but I had a good time. I'm hoping you did as well.
Yes, I love the Ed Camp atmosphere. I love the idea that we are, you know, having the opportunity to learn what we want to learn. And if that is just an opportunity to share, then we share about whatever the topic is. I think it's important. Maybe it's therapeutic too.
It is therapeutic. There's something about like being around other professionals who are passionate and excited, because, you know, at our school, or at least for me at my school day, there are people who are certainly passionate and excited like I am, but it's not everybody. And sometimes you start to wonder, like, am I just that freak that's way too invested in my job? And then you go to an ed camp and everyone is that freak, so you don't feel bad.
And I think you nailed it when you said that, Brett, because you definitely get an opportunity to, I guess, share in the excitement of learning about something new that you can take back to your classroom versus maybe not even getting a chance to interact with those people at your job that are those types. I love learning, and it's so nice to be around people who love learning too, because I think when you have those people together, it augments learning to a level that you are not necessarily you can't really find in other places. So I enjoy it wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I agree. Well, for my audience who don't know you, who don't get the luxury of being in Orlando and seeing you at awesome events like Ed Camps, who are you? Can you tell them a little bit about who you are and what you're about?
Well, my name is Dean Gainey, of course. I am in year number 13 as a general classroom educator, currently teaching third grade. I have taught fourth and fifth grade in the past. I love diversity and community in terms of topics or ideas. In fact, I host a chat on Fled Chat every second Wednesday night around that topic. I also love the student-driven classroom. I've written about that a little bit in the EduMatch book series. I'm also an author myself. Published my first solo book in April of 2018 titled Journey to the Why in You. I'm definitely an excited learner. I'm definitely looking to always learn something new and be able to take something new back into the classroom to innovate and make learning interactive and engaging for students. So that's all about me. I'm also a singer and an actor, and I've done some of that, and a military veteran too, for what it's worth.
Yeah, you know, I told you I listened to you on Brent Coley's show, Teaching Tales, and I did not know all those things about you. You kind of laid everything out for Brent, and I was like, wow, I didn't know all those other parts of Dean.
Well, it's interesting, Brett, because I feel like all of those things enable me to reach my students more. I look at them as being, okay, well, I may have a student who's a singer, but may not be an actor, or I may have a student that would love to be in the military, but may not necessarily be doing a productive in a certain other area. So I think the more that I'm able to bring into the classroom, the better I'm able to reach my students. And that's what it's all about. It's about reaching them, not just teaching them. And I love it. I love being involved in all these different types of things. And it just, I don't know, I guess in certain situations it'll come up, but I kind of like, you know, the idea that when you look at me, you don't necessarily know all of those things, but as you get to have those opportunities to be around me, they come out. They come out at the time that they need to come out.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's really important that as teachers, we bring our full selves into our classroom, because otherwise your kids will notice the difference that you're holding back. And I loved what you said about it's important that we reach them, not just teach them. I think that's such a critical component, that there are those kids that you know, reaching them is so much more important than whatever content they may take away from our classrooms.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, so I think about those times where I've had conversations, whether it be with the entire class or an individual student, that are maybe redirective or maybe focused on some character education kinds of things, or opening up their minds to thinking in a new and different way. I think it's easy to look at that as non-instructional time. I think there was a conversation that was had at Camp Tampa Bay about this very thing. And I said, I challenged everybody in the room to maybe reframe their thinking in terms of how they looked at those moments, because truly in those moments, I feel like they're learning so much more than they might in the individual isolated lesson that I might have chosen to teach that day. It's so much more than it would have been had I not taken those opportunities to have what I call teachable moments and being able to connect a thought, a comment, an action, a behavior to something bigger, thereby increasing the learning for the student. And I think those moments, we need to use them because they're there and they are indeed instructional.
Hmm. Yeah. You know, it makes me think of that term, that soft skills, you know, which it always has, to me, soft skills has this, like, by nature, negative connotation to it. Like, it's somehow not as important and soft and irrelevant. I don't know why I always think of it that way. And I kind of think about what you just said about, you know, it may not directly tie to curriculum, but man, is it so much more important? Can they learn so much more out of those moments and those skills than being able to perfectly articulate a sentence, you know, and make sure punctuation is perfect and things like that, you know, that those quote soft skills are probably the most important things our kids get from us.
Yes, Brett. Yes, absolutely. You know, we just finished sort of honoring Martin Luther King on January, I think it was 21st, it was. And he knew, you know, he has a quote that references character as being such an important part of an individual, not just intelligence, you know? And so I challenge my students to see that, yes, it's great. It's amazing to have knowledge and to be intelligent, great mental capacity. However, it takes character to know how to manage that knowledge and use it in a way to help and benefit others rather than to destroy and bring down. So, you know, truly, I almost view character as being more important than academics, because I think if I didn't know it all, my character says, I want to learn it all. You know, if I didn't know it, my character says, I'm not too proud to say I don't know it, and I'm going to go and try to learn. But the other way around, I think we're limited when we just know things, but yet our character puts us or takes us or puts us in a place that we're not able to handle what we know. And so I want them to understand that it's both. It's the whole child. It's the whole student. It's the whole person. And when we focus on just one part, then we're not focusing on the whole.
Yeah. That's a, you know, we haven't even gotten any of my questions in. We're already just dropping knowledge, Dean. Good job, man. You're on it today. I like it.
Well, you know what, Brad? It's, you know, you're saying things and I'm in agreement. And so it almost like it's like something in me leaps, you know, when I hear it. And it's like there's something I want to say in response to it. So really kudos to you too for being able to hit on those pressure points, I guess.
You know, I want to talk about one other thing with you, because I think that it's a great example of how you view the importance of instruction and education. And, you know, this past summer, you went on a little trip, just a tiny one, just a small little trip. And where did you go? You went away this summer. Where'd you go?
I went to Tanzania, specifically the Morogoro region of Tanzania, and I was there for the entire month of July, pretty much.
And you were just out having a nice little vacation, right?
Well, we definitely got to take in a little bit of the aesthetic nature of the country. However, primarily it was a teacher fellowship where we had the opportunity to experience classrooms and students and be able to help teachers to, to identify best practices and maybe improve their craft and sort of work together in a collaborative relationship to be able to also learn in that capacity, as well as be able to help in whatever way that they might need it.
That's super cool. I that's just so awesome. And I really have not had a chance to talk to you about it since you got back. So what are some of your takeaways from going to Tanzania to teach for a month?
Well, one of them is rather broad. It certainly applies to education, but the one thing I remember the most is it's amazing how someone who may not have as much as we do really does have a lot. It's so limited resources, that kind of context. We have a lot of things in America that are afforded to us, things that we have as resources that we can turn to, people even as resources that we can turn to, libraries as resources that we can turn to. However, I think when you end up in a limited resource context, it really challenges your creativity. It really maybe puts pressure on you to find innovative ways above and beyond what someone who has resources would be able to find, because you don't have them available to you. And so I noticed that, you know, these teachers are all amazing teachers. They are so willing to learn. They are so willing to honestly reach their kids. And they were so receptive and open to new ideas and sharing and collaborating. You know, and so in that kind of environment, you know, there are some limitations, but at the same time, the mindset that they have is all about learning. It's all about being able to disseminate knowledge. And they really do a great job of that. But the fact that they are able to to be in a position that opens them up to, okay, well, there might be other ways of doing this, is even more powerful, because I think that that positions you for learning, and that positions you for being able to, as I said earlier, reach your kids rather than just teaching them.
So, I mean, you have a lack of resources, which is kind of to be, you know, I guess to be expected, but, you know, were there similarities that stuck out at you or jumped out at you between, you know, I think, you know, you're quite literally on a whole other side of the world. And, you know, is it just vastly different, or are there some definite common threads that is education regardless of where you are?
Well, I believe that the focus on education as the primary catalyst for success in life is maybe, I mean, depending on where we are in the United States, it may be a little different. Education is everything there. They believe in it, parents believe in it, and they take it very, very seriously. I don't know if that can be compared to everybody in the world. So, you know, I don't know if that's comparative to everybody. Do you really take education seriously? They understand that there's a lot of content that needs to be learned. The students understand respect. They understand encouraging others, their peers, and they understand the value of education in that it enables them to have opportunities that they may not have outside of that. the classrooms in Tanzania are generally very, very large in terms of the number of students. That's a difference than in America. I have in my third grade classroom, I have 20 students. But in a typical elementary classroom, in fact, I remember a pre-K classroom there having 63 students.
Wow.
And one teacher. I remember a secondary school classroom, these would be middle school / high school students, having anywhere from 70 to 100 students in them, depending on the class. And there's one teacher. So the idea of respect is very, very big out there because you have one teacher that's basically empowered to teach this huge group of students. And there's a lot of pressure in order to reach them. There's a lot of pressure in order to do what they can in order to ensure that learning is happening. They're able to pass their exams and so on, because education is the push. Education is the thing that's going to change everything in their lives if they can get the education that they need.
Wow, I can't even imagine trying to wrangle 100 middle school or high school students at one time. I mean, it's by myself. That seems crazy. Definitely different than what we would do here. And I mean, the students are manageable in that space. Like, learning is still happening even with that. I just don't imagine that would work. That just doesn't make sense in my head.
I will say yes to that, because there's a high level of respect for every teacher. But at the same token, I know some teachers tend to feel limited to teaching a certain way because of the sheer number of students in the classroom. So, for example, being able to bring in those innovative practices that may involve them getting up and moving around, for example, that might be a little bit more challenging for them because there's maybe not a lot of space in the room. And then they have to be able to assess and evaluate whether or not students are gaining that knowledge. And sometimes it's easier, is not really the right word, but sometimes it is, I'm going to use it. It's easier to direct teach, because then you understand that you're conveying the information that needs to be conveyed, but you're not always sure that it's being received in the minds of the students through that particular method. So that's the challenge that I, in conversation with some of them, understood that they were having. And one class in particular, a teacher actually tried to start to implement some of these things. And it was so rewarding to walk in and just see like the kids up and moving and talking and having group discussions. And it was amazing to see that this teacher was so willing to do it. And I think that, I mean, to me, it lit a fire for them. And I know that even now he's continuing to use, some of those things that we were able to talk about in our interactions.
Hmm. And do you maintain contact with any of the teachers you met there? Is that something that is part of it? Or is it kind of, I went, I did, and moving on?
It was not a requirement. However, I am in contact with at least two of the teachers there, because I wanted to be able to have opportunities to continue to connect even classrooms and share and, maybe help in whatever capacity that I can. So I am in contact with a couple of them still, and I get a chance to hear and learn about how things are going out there even now.
That feels like when I think about it, that's like a loaded question, just because I know you and I feel like there's no world in which you would have not found a way to stay in contact with them.
That's funny, Brad. That's funny, but it's true. I mean, with an experience such as that one, how can you just walk away cold turkey knowing, that there's an opportunity for, a continued collaboration?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. And one last question, and we'll move past. I just find it so fascinating. But how did it impact your classroom? What did you bring back that you'd, because I know you and you would have gone to learn as much as help them learn. What did you bring back?
One of the things that I really, really loved about their classrooms, and every classroom was different, but every classroom had some way of reinforcing learning for each other. And to be more specific, if a student comes to the board, answers a question, answers a problem, and does well, answer the question correctly. And this is my limited explanation of this, but there is a, I'm going to call it a chant. I'm going to call it a musical response, where the students, every student in the classroom, there's hand gestures involved. It sounds like a little song that they sing. And it was in Swahili, so I didn't understand it exactly. However, when I asked the teacher about it, the teacher said that it was a way of reinforcing or students encouraging their peers to continue to do well, continue to do the good work that they're doing. And every time somebody had a success in the classroom, that's what we heard. And I love the idea. Now I'm big on that, you know, just individually, but how much more was I able to impart that into my students when I came back? The importance of encouraging each other and how important that makes somebody feel, and how it builds community in the classroom when you have others that are supporting you, not just the teacher in the room. I also just, you know, the idea that I was able to show them a different perspective, how learning is just so, so important in a different country, even though they don't necessarily have many of the things that we get to look at every single day. When they don't have an iPad to walk around with, they're still learning. When they don't have necessarily the way to get to school, when they walk to school, for example, versus a car that we get to ride in, you know. So bringing back that perspective and that view, like I having gone, I can sort of give them that firsthand account of what it was like, and so it really opens their minds to, wow, if they can learn, regardless of whatever limitations they might be experiencing, how much more do I have the capacity to learn if I just make the decision to do it? So I mean, that's what I brought back. I brought that back because I think that, to me, that overshadows everything else that I could have brought back.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really cool. That's I imagine a, I mean, maybe not once in a lifetime, but I mean, it sounds like one of those once in a lifetime opportunities to be able to go out and do something like that. It's just so powerful.
It is. And it changed me. You know, I went out there with the mindset, with the idea that I'm going to help to change things in Tanzania. And I guess one of the biggest realizations is it changed me. You know, I came back thinking differently. I came back with an ignited passion again, all over again, for what I do, what I'm able to do in the classroom every day. I love the idea of enlightening or educating the mind. My father was big on that. He talked about just how important it is to have those chances to enlighten people and to educate a mind. It's far reaching, and there is no value. It's invaluable. There's no value that can be attributed to that. It's unlimited. So I think it's an experience that anybody and everybody should have, because you won't be the same after.
Yeah, I like it. Man, it's cool. I'm jealous. And then I was just throw it out there. I'm envious. And I know. But man, that's cool. It's awesome. Well, I appreciate you sharing that with me. I do. I know, I have not had a chance to talk to you about it. Seems this school year has been a little chaotic for all of us, and we haven't been able to line up our coffee EDU Saturday mornings again yet. But I'm glad you had a good time. It's cool.
Yes, I'm glad to. Thank you. And I hope we can get that coffee EDU going again, because it's such a powerful thing in a very lax kind of environment to be able to come and just, I don't know, carry on those conversations that matter.
It is, absolutely. Well, until then, let's go to my regular questions for my guests. And the first question I ask all my guests is, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
I think the biggest problem facing education today is that we have forgotten. And I say this on the whole, because obviously when you think about you and I and many other educators who understand the value of learning, we constantly engage in it. I don't feel like it's a global understanding and a global practice. And to be more specific there, I think if when I put myself in that position of learning, that means I will not ever know everything. I will not ever know everything because I'm constantly looking for another thing to learn. I'm constantly looking for another opportunity to take something away from something I hear, something I experience, and apply it to my practice. And that mindset means that I'm not proud. That mindset means that I don't know everything. That mindset means that I'm constantly looking for ways to reach my students. I think the opposite of that is, okay, I know everything, and this is the way I'm going to do it, and I've always done it this way, so I'm going to do it this way. And I think that those are dangerous words when we get stuck in status quo, stuck in a position that we can't get out of, and then we're no longer effective in the classroom. We can't reach students because we are limited by our own inability to keep learning. And no matter what level of education you are in, whether you are a teacher or an administrator, I think that learning is the thing that changes everything. I think it changes everything. If you are constantly in a perpetual state of learning, how can you ever not be willing to see something differently or to continue learning or to understand a certain situation better because you're constantly in that sea of learning? So I think that the challenge is that we need to be in that position of learning all the time. That way we're more effective and real change. Can actually happen because we're constantly looking for ways. We're constantly looking for it.
I love that in the last second there, you connected it back to change, because that was right where I was thinking, is like we recognize like sort of the problems in general, and yet we get stuck in the this is how I've always done it, this has worked in the past kind of mentality. And I don't think that's healthy or good for any of us.
You're right. And so, you know, one thing that you can count on, you know, the only constant in life is change. You know, the students I teach today are not the same caliber, per se, for lack of a better term, of students that I taught during my first year. You know, there are needs. I recently wrote a chapter called Ever Present or Ever Changing Nature in Needs. And so the students' needs today are different than even the needs of the students that I taught 5 years ago. So how can I do the same things in a classroom that I did 5 years ago when my students are not the same as the students I taught 5 years ago? It won't work.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and it's I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I feel like there is a direct correlation between that mindset and teachers. It is most common in the teachers who are most frustrated by student behavior. And what I mean by that is they're always the teachers that say, well, kids these days don't work hard enough. Kids these days don't this, or this group of kids this year is that. And then I say, well, have you tried this, this, or this? And they go, no, I don't do that in my classroom. I only do this. And I feel like in my experience as a coach, that is often a connection I see.
Yeah, I think, It really sets a tone in your classroom when you, as the teacher, are not afraid to try something different. It energizes the room, and I think one of the consequences of that are students that are willing to try something different or try something new. And I don't think you can lose when you are willing to try something new. You mentioned Brent Coley and Teaching Tales podcast. Something I mentioned in conversation with him, you know, it was more of a question that I asked, and it was, what would you do? What would you change in the classroom if you knew that you could not fail? And I think about that question a lot because I understand the value of maybe this doesn't work exactly like I want it to work, but that's not failure. That is realizing what's not working. But really, if we truly grasp the understanding of this can't fail, it will actually maybe reveal something new that I need to learn, or it will teach me something that I did not know before. If we really grasp that understanding of things, I think that and applied it to our approach to teaching and learning, I think it will transform a classroom. That's why I'm constantly looking for things that I can use, things that I can do, things that I can try, things that I can create that will ultimately be for the benefit of the students. Because the more I do that, the more that students understand that learning is a perpetual process. And it should continue to be a perpetual process. Even me as a teacher, even though, you know, I might have this degree or that degree or whatever, you know, I convey to them, I haven't stopped learning. I read every day because I understand the value of learning.
Yeah, you make me think about iterative change and slow change, and that idea that it doesn't, what you're doing can't fail. The worst case scenario is you, number one, don't repeat it, but it informed your decision-making for the next idea. Like, you got something out of it, right? Like, there is no failure in that moment. There was an attempt that provided different data than I hoped it would.
Absolutely. And so let's apply that too to literature. You know, students tell me all the time, well, I don't like this book, or this book is not very good. And while it could be very easy for them to put that book down and abandon it, you know, I tell them, well, even if you learned that you didn't like the book, you still got something out of it. Even though your perception of the book was that it wasn't very good. And so I challenge them, even when they don't like a book, you should try to finish it. I encourage you to finish it anyway, because even if you determined that this and this didn't make this book work for me, you learned something that you can then apply later on. Maybe in something that you write later on, you can say, well, I'm not going to put this in there. I'm not going to do that because I didn't like the way that it was done in this book. That's a learning experience. You know, I want learning to be happening in all kinds of ways, in dynamic ways. Everything is a learning experience. And I try to instill that in their minds on a daily basis.
Yeah. Why do you think it is that we don't have that? To me, of all people in the world, teachers should be the most likely to be lifelong learners, because it's exactly what we're trying to accomplish with our students. So why is it that so many of our teachers are either just don't want to learn new things or are afraid to try new things? I think we could maybe go either way with it. So why do you think it is that we have that lack?
Well, I think to some degree, it's a decision that has been made. It's a decision that has been made to become complacent, or to become, okay, I'm going to sit down right here and this is where I am. This is where I'm going to be. And I don't know whether that's a direct decision or an indirect decision, but either way, perhaps some have made that decision. I think on the other side of things, in terms of the risk associated with it, the idea that, oh my gosh, if I try this, it could go sour, it could get really bad. I think, honestly, maybe it's not being modeled enough. You know, I am a teacher in the classroom, but at the same time, I think I have, you know, certain things about me that include leadership. And I think when a leader models risk taking, when leaders model change, when leaders are not afraid to accept and adopt new avenues, new ways of doing things, and it's visible and it can be seen by those in which that leader is leading, I believe that slowly changes a culture of an organization, of a school, and it encourages, by example, others to take those kinds of risks. If I heard my leader or a boss or whoever, a principal, saying that we need to look for different ways to change things. In fact, let's talk about how one thing that we might be able to change, and I'm going to start and I'm going to work on this thing. I'm going to change the way that I do this because I think that that might be a better way. When those kinds of conversations are had, it's empowering. It's empowering to other people. Like, okay, well, if the person that is in this particular position is willing to get dirty or to get messy and learn in the situation, then why am I not also willing to do that? I think, and certainly it's not an overnight kind of thing. I think people need to see that modeled. And as it's modeled more, then by nature of, you know, being in this together, we all want to be better together, then I think that we will be better together. But I think it has to be modeled. I think it has to be a decision that we make, that it's not just about us, you know, and I say it's not just about us because we do have to think about ourselves and being the very best that we can be for our students. But at the same time, the primary focus needs to be on our students and how they are to benefit from the things that we do in the classroom, because that's really the success. That is the ultimate goal, is to see that what we are doing is working and the benefits are showing up in the ways that the students interact, act, behave, learn, grow, excel, et cetera.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm trying to think of like a time one of my administrators would have said, like, this is what I'm doing is not working and I need to do it differently. You know, I think my current principal has probably said that before, for sure. But I don't think that I've necessarily seen that in the past with leaders. And I don't think I can come up with an example of upper leadership beyond the school principal saying something to that effect and admitting that kind of mistake. And I think partly just because of the politicized and public nature of what we do, they are concerned about backlash of saying such a thing. But
The vulnerability of it too. You know, I think, well, and I'm sorry if I interrupted you, but
no, you're good.
The vulnerability piece and not being afraid to express that maybe this is not something that I'm doing well in. I think a leader, by nature of the fact that it's a leader, you know, you don't want to be viewed as weak, or you don't want to be viewed as less than. So you don't necessarily, you know, the first words out of your mouth are not, oh gosh, I made a mistake, or the first words out of your mouth are, gosh, I need to find ways to improve. What do you think about the way that I'm doing this? You know, it almost takes a lot of nerve, I think, for a leader to understand the power in being human, the power in understanding and approaching what he does or she does as a human, you know, not just as a leader, but as a human that is willing to, I guess, identify with the fact that I didn't hit the mark on this one. And I'm willing to entertain, I'm willing to hear, I'm willing to listen to what somebody else thinks, even as a leader. I think that makes you even more of a leader than you were before, when you are willing to be open to other people's viewpoints.
Yeah, I like it. I'm curious to see as I embark on a new journey for myself, if that's reflected in some of the classes I'm about to start taking. But while we're rolling right along, I think I can agree with you. I think a systemic issue, I think we systemically have a lack of lifelong learning as a valued thing in our teachers. And I think I can agree that somehow instilling that back in them would have a humongous positive impact on education on the whole. So I think I can agree with you. That's a big problem we have to deal with.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's easy, you know, and I'm not dismissing the idea that we are all very, very busy people. Cause it's true. We're all very, very busy people. And sometimes the sheer number of things that we have to do limit our capacity to be learning. But one thing about me, I can tell you, is that if I really want to know something, I'm going to find out. I'm going to keep searching. I'm going to keep looking. I'm going to keep listening. I'm going to keep reading until I find out. You know, so there are ways to make it happen. But yes, I do understand that we're all busy people.
Very true. All right, let's go. We're rolling along, and we've only gotten to one of my questions. So let's go to my second one here. My second question is, what is something you're doing that you wish all educators would do?
I would probably have to answer that by saying, thinking out of the box. And to define what I mean by that is, we, you know, some schools have textbooks, some schools have school-wide ways of delivering knowledge or disseminating knowledge to students. And so I would say thinking out of the box, thinking of novel ways that are engaging, interactive, and innovative to achieve not only what you would have achieved during a particular lesson, but maybe two and three times more than that. So thinking about a standard that you need to execute, standard that you kind of need to have students master, but then approaching that standard in a way that accomplishes that standard and more. When I think about standardized testing, for example, don't like to talk about standardized testing, but I'm going to use it as an example. I am not, when I teach, I don't teach worrying about standardized testing. In fact, I teach in a way with the goal of making sure that students are more than prepared for whatever test they have to take, so they're not worried about the test, if that makes sense. So instead of looking at the test as, oh my gosh, how are my students going to perform on it? I'm trying to triangulate or bring in multiple ideas in every lesson that I teach so that when the time comes for them to sit down and take a test, then they're more than prepared for it rather than underprepared.
Yeah, I can see that. I, you know, when you talk about the test as the example, I used to always say that to my students is they would, you know, we'd get all the way up until like March and they're like, you know, the big test is coming up, Mr. Shuffler, are we going to prepare for it? I was like, we've been doing that all year and then some. That test is going to be easy compared to the last test I just gave you. And they're like, huh? And I'm like, yeah, you guys are overprepared. Don't worry about it. Like, just don't think about it. But I like what you said there. I really liked, I want to key in on something. You said that you think outside the box, you find alternative solutions that are engaging and effective to not just teach what you would have taught originally, but to teach more than what you would have taught. And I think that's a really critical component. And you and I kind of touched on this, I feel like, at EdCamp, because there was a session where people were asking for specific technology tools because they wanted to incorporate more technology in their classroom. And you and I both were kind of like, wait, that's backwards. That's not the way that's supposed to go.
Right. Definitely being able to identify your purpose and the why for the technology is definitely the first thing. The pedagogy behind it is the first thing, because I think if we don't hit the pedagogy first, then we are going down a rabbit hole and we're just checking off of a box and saying, okay, we use technology today, but was it effective? And really, that's the goal, right? The goal for anything that we do in the classroom is to be effective. Otherwise, we're just twiddling our thumbs and wasting our time.
Yeah, I agree. I like that. And I think that's a good measure is, and I think the other thing that's nice about it is it's a non-confrontational way to accomplish that with teachers. It's to say, I'm not saying what you're doing isn't working. I'm not saying it's not even teaching the standard. It might be. But you could teach so much more, and why wouldn't we do it that way? Why wouldn't we find a way that's even better, even if this one is great?
Right. And I think, too, to sort of add to that, the idea of students being able to see that, wow, I'm not the same student I was when I walked in here. There's so much power in that. And I think sometimes we, you know, I go to a parent conference or a student study meeting or and so I'm talking about the growth and success of a student that I've seen, and that's all well and good, but it's something altogether different when the student has the ability to see how they've grown. And so that self-reflection piece for the student and allowing the students to reflect on their learning is also another thing that I think needs to happen in the classroom more often. And sometimes when they're, because the students are honest, they are absolutely honest, and when you structure that for them, thinking about that whole idea of self-reflection, making them sort of think about back to these things that we've learned, they're not going to lie. They're going to say, well, I did this, I did that. Wow, we learned a lot of things. And so being intentional about that self-reflection piece, I think, is also important because that's also reinforcing learning.
Yeah, I get it. I like it. I love it. Dean, we're 2 out of 3 down. We got 1 left to go. And you're just dropping the knowledge on us today, and I appreciate it. Let's go to question number 3, and this is the softball. This is the personal one. Who is the greatest teacher you've ever had?
Whew, it's just interesting that you have this question because, and there's many people I could name but I would have to say it's the one that was responsible or the one that was the catalyst for me becoming a teacher. And I wrote about it in the first chapter of Journey Through the YNU. Her name is Enid Sweeting. She was my first grade teacher, and she was firm. She was firm, but she was kind and she was genuine and she cared. And there's no doubt about that. Now, I certainly grew up with both my mom and my dad. Excellent, you know, childhood, excellent family, excellent upbringing. But she had an impact on me. She influenced me, and she influenced me in the sense that I wanted to go back and be around every year. You know, every year after I left her room, even I would go back and help and try to see how I could, you know, do things. And she inspired me to be a teacher because of the way that she was able to be an influence to me. And so I was inspired to influence others. And maybe I knew somewhere in my head that I was going to be a teacher before then, but it was definitely clear after her class that if I did not go into engineering, because I liked engineering too, but if I didn't go there, then I would definitely be in education. So I had an idea early on that she inspired me and that I would want to be an educator because of the sheer ability to change the world.
I think that's a powerful reason to become an educator, and at the same time, kind of a heavy burden to say that is the power that we have sometimes, is to change the world.
Yeah. I mean, so just the thought of that, imagine who, you know, we encounter every single day in the classroom that may be watching us so closely that we may be an inspiration to them to do exactly that. And it may not necessarily be in an education capacity. Maybe they're going to walk into a different environment, but because of the inspiration that the teacher that he or she had provided for them, they are empowered to do exactly that, change the world.
It's good stuff. Good. I don't think there's a better note to end it on. I think we'll stick with that. I like it. I do want to give you a chance though, because I should have done it at the beginning and I really didn't. You mentioned the book, but what is? Can you tell me a little bit about The Journey to the YNU?
Well, The Journey to the YNU really speaks of the journey. And I will tell you that my journey started earlier on, I think even knowing that there was something in me that I would ultimately grow to understand and know. I think there was a passion, there was a drive, there was a reason why I was inspired by my first grade teacher. Maybe there was a purpose even way back then for where I am today. And many stories, many challenges, many obstacles that I've had to encounter along the way that would ultimately lead me to why I am who I am and ultimately hopefully encourage others to look at their journey, whether they are just starting it in the middle of it, or maybe are about to start. Everything, all things considered, the influences, the inspiration, the obstacles, the challenges, the problems, the issues, the realizations, the stories, it all adds up. And so we are greater than our parts, right? The sum of it all is that we are ultimately working to be a better version of ourselves. And so that's the premise of the book, is all of these things that I've experienced are helping me to discover, rediscover who I am, rediscover, redefine purpose in me so that I can ultimately be the best version of myself and thereby inspire others, thereby encourage others to be the best you that you can be. I think, and so I have a quote, is that you are the only you that will ever be. Your experiences, your story, and your diversity. And so being able to tell a story, right? You, Brad, you are the only Brad Scheffler that can be Brad Scheffler. And if you don't be it, then there will be no Brad Scheffler. And so being the best version of you that you can be is necessary because something in you, somebody else might need. And if you don't be you, then they won't be a conduit. They won't be a benefactor of the you that only you can be.
I like it. Well, Dean, I so appreciate your time. And for my audience, definitely check out The Journey to the Why in You. I have my copy now signed by the author himself. I'm very excited about it. And I highly recommend it. Dean is a wonderful guy and his writings are excellent. So definitely check it out. And if my audience would like to get a hold of you, how can they go about doing that?
I can be found on Twitter at Dean, D-E-N-E, underscore Gainey, G-A-I-N-E-Y. I can be reached also via my website, www.deangainey.com. And with regards to the book, that can certainly be found on Amazon as well. So you can reach me either of those ways. My email contact is on the website as well. So please reach out.
Well, and links to all of the Twitter, website, and the book on Amazon are all in the show notes as well, so you can swipe over and check those out. And Dean, again, I really appreciate your time. I think it's a great conversation, and I really appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me on, Brad. I really enjoyed this conversation too.
Hey, man. Have a good night.
You too.
Dean, thank you so much for chatting with me. You definitely got me thinking, and I hope my audience loves it too. To connect with Dean, find him on Twitter at Dean_Gainey and at his website, deangainey.com. Also, do not forget to check out his book, Journey to the Why in You, which you can purchase now on Amazon at this link. So check the show notes to links to all those. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter or Instagram at Brad Schreffler. I love to hear from you there. That's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Or check out the feedback page on my website, which gives you more options for feedback as well, which you can find at bradschreffler.com/feedback. Until next week, what would you do if you knew it wouldn't fail? Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio, your voice is right here.